What up, y'all? Welcome to another episode of the Let's Talk Music Podcast. I'm your host, Kareem, aka Keys. Whatever you prefer is fine with me. And I'm back with a really, really, really dope episode. I know it's been a little while since I've dropped the previous podcast episode. And honestly, it's just because there's a lot when it comes to running, you know, a whole legit whole business on Instagram. You know, I'm sure that a lot of you artists listening can relate. You know, there's a lot of hats that you have to wear. There's a lot of things that you need to do to make sure that things run properly. And you know, I'm no different. And I still fall victim to it just as much as you do. So I can't stay down for too long because I'm here to support you along your journey. So I'm always gonna find my way back to doing this. And today's episode is going to be really special because I brought a guest on here to talk about one of the hardest things that it comes to hardest and one of the most highly slept on things when it comes to being an artist who wants to take your music full time. And that's going to be centered around the topic of publishing. So I brought a special guest on here. Her name is Lauren. But before I dive into the conversation between Lauren and I want to just give you guys a heads up about what's going on social right now as far as I go on Instagram. I am offering 15-minute free calls. I brought those back. That has been one of my most beneficial freebies that I've given to the community. So I brought that back. So if you want to get on a call with me, talk about some of the things you've heard on my podcast, or maybe even some of the things that I've posted on Instagram, or you know, whatever you're going through at this particular time and moment, let's address it. Jump on a call with me and we can chop it up. Now, before I dive into this really, really juicy conversation between Lauren and I just want to make it known that I have a program that I have launched a couple months ago, actually. So it's not that new per se. I'm kind of just mentioning it for the first time publicly now at the stage of where I'm at with things, but I'm ready to talk about it now. And the program was honestly amazing. We touched on topics about branding, why email lists are important. We took a super deep dive into Instagram and talked about practical strategies on Instagram that you can use to establish a loyal following, and a bunch of other things that I feel like artists are just never told that they would more than likely have to discover the hard way. Now, because it was such a success the first time, I'm bringing it back around a second time, and I'm opening it to literally everybody now at this point. But of course, it's on a first come, first serve basis. I only want to work with serious artists. As of this recording, I have 2 slots filled. I'm looking for 5 in total. So that means that 3 seats are remaining. If you want to apply, I'm going to put a link in the show notes. Make sure that you apply because these 3 seats, they may go quick. My first time doing this program, all the seats were filled within the first couple weeks, and I did 8 the first time. This time I'm only doing 5, and again, only 3 are available. Now, that wraps up my announcements. I was aiming to get it done in under 5 minutes, and I did, so that is great. Now, I'm going to dive into the conversation between Lauren and I, and I really, really, really want you all to take some serious notes here because this is a conversation that is, I'm telling you, artists are not having this kind of conversation. They're not getting these kind of things explained to them, and it's a shame because this information is by far amongst the most important stuff that you need to know. This is how you get paid. If you're looking to take this full time, this is the information that you really need to know so that it can get to that point. So I'm not going to flap my gums for too much longer. I'm going to let Lauren do her thing. And I hope that you all are able to take some very serious gems back from this conversation. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and dive right into this conversation between Lauren and I. Hopefully you have a pen and pad, your laptop, some ability to take notes of some sort. And I really hope you enjoy.
My name's Lauren. I grew up playing music, all kinds of instruments, and eventually settled on bass. I played bass for a very long time and ended up just being like the organized one in the band. So I ended up doing some management in my high school bands, and that ultimately became my career in the music industry. And, you know, in the last couple of years, and especially during the pandemic, just kind of intensified this. I found that music publishing in particular was really complicated and right. nobody knew what to do
at all.
And so, as you know, a manager of a lot of like smaller developing artists, the burden kind of fell on me to figure it out and make sure that they were registered appropriately and collecting all the royalties that they could. And then when the pandemic hit, it was like, okay, this is going to be one of our main sources of income since there's no more touring. Mm-hmm. So what are ways that we can do this even better and more accurately and get more money into the hands of songwriters? And so me and some of my co-founders, who are actually co-managers on a few clients at the time, decided to start a publishing administration company and hired a, you know, we have a co-founder who is in the banking industry and software development. And we developed this digital platform for independent songwriters to register their songs and collect their publishing all around the world.
Nice. Yeah. What's the name of that company?
It is called the National Organization of Independent Songwriters. And we call it the NOIS for short.
Dope. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about publishing. What is it? Like, what is this weird thing that is like unspoken but by far one of the most important things that artists should be very familiar with? Like, go ahead and just give us in a nutshell, or however you can break it down.
For sure. So in a nutshell, music publishing has to do with the money around a composition. And so I'm going to take a moment to break down what a composition is.
yeah please.
So there's two types of copyrights in music when you create a song. The first one is the composition, and legally this is the lyrics and the melody. Mm-hmm. And that is just the song itself. So whatever format it is in, it is that's the song, the composition. The second kind of copyright that comes up in music is the master recording. Mm-hmm. And so this is like the actual recording of the song. So two different copyrights there. So when we talk about music publishing, we're specifically talking about the composition, songwriters, the lyrics, the melodies, the song itself, and not mm-hmm. the recording.
Mm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I know this is going to be like an obvious question, but I can only say something but so many times. It's always greater sometimes when you get to hear it from somebody else. But why should musicians care about this as early on as possible?
Yeah, so there's a couple different reasons. The biggest one being that the sooner that you register all of your work, the easier it is to prove that you're the owner. Okay. You definitely want to make sure that you are the owner of your work, right? And yeah. The second being that the sooner you register, the sooner you get paid your royalties. So there's, you know, most places will do back collections up mm-hmm. to 3 years. Mm-hmm. So there is sort of like a grace period if you put out a song or somebody puts out your song and right. you don't register. Like, it's not the end of the world. It's not too late. Still register. Still do it, you know?
Yeah.
But getting all that money together can take anywhere from like 9 months to even up to like 2 years to see all of that money come through. So if you're registered from the start, you'll get your payments every single time that organization pays out. So in the instance for the NOIS, if you're registered with us, it would be every quarter.
Mm, okay. And that's like mm-hmm. the typical payout period, right? Mm-hmm. Every quarter. Yeah. Okay. So I know that one of the most popular terms in any of my research that I come across is the word mechanical royalties are always thrown around. What exactly are mechanical royalties?
Yeah, so mechanical royalties are paid every single time the composition is duplicated. Mm-hmm. So it's the same way as like your for a sound recording, you know, how you get paid every time it's streamed?
Right.
You get paid by DistroKid or TuneCore or whatever else. It's the same thing. But the problem with mechanicals, especially in the past, is that you can only get them if you're a publisher or affiliated with a publisher. So it makes them challenging for people who are self-published to be able to collect them appropriately. But it gets paid every single time your song or composition is duplicated. So this includes, like, if somebody else covers your song, you still get paid a mechanical royalty every time their song is, like, their cover is streamed or downloaded or printed onto a CD. If it's your own song, you get paid every single time the song is streamed or downloaded or put onto a CD. Yep. So that's in a nutshell what they are.
Right. And you mentioned that some of that money would be hard to obtain if you didn't have some type of representation. And this representation is probably going to be your publishing administrator, correct?
Yeah.
So I know what a publishing administrator is, but just for the sake of the listeners, go ahead and explain to them what a publishing admin is and what their role is for the artist.
Yeah. So there's a couple different ways that you can sell your music publishing, right? As the owner of a song. And publishing administrators are organizations that just collect your royalties and they don't take any ownership of your song. There are other kinds of deals like co-publishing deals where you actually get an advance and then usually they recoup that and then they own a portion of your publishing for forever sometimes or for limited terms or whatever. There's a couple different ways you can do that, but publishing administration, you keep all of your rights to your song. Administrator just goes out and collects every single micro penny that is owed to you for your publishing.
Now, is this nationwide or is it global or does it vary? Like, what are the circumstances here? And I mean, you can speak, you know, from the perspective of your company that you represent.
Yeah. So the noise, what we do that's a little different is we directly collect your publishing all around the world. So we actually go and register your song in all of the different performance rights organizations and mechanical rights organizations to collect your royalties in all of the territories that have them, basically, all around the world. So anywhere from India to Canada to the UK to Australia, we're collecting your royalties everywhere. And so I can't speak for all publishing administrators, but that's what we do.
Right. And it'd be very tough to be an artist here in America trying to collect your royalties out in New Zealand. So it's very important to be affiliated with a pub admin that will do these very generous things for you. Now, I just recently launched a program. It's official but unofficial. It's called the Music Accelerator Program, and I work with a lot of artists one-on-one, but in order to be a part of the program, you have to apply, and the application has a question on it, and it's, what PRO are you affiliated with? Because I want to know if this person understands the importance of being in a PRO, and if you're signed up with one, you get it. If you aren't, that's a whole nother conversation. But for those that are listening that aren't affiliated with the PRO, let's talk about what that is. PRO stands for Performance Rights Organization, and their duty is to collect music on behalf of artists. But what else do they do? What else can you add to that? I know that that's their primary responsibility, but what else can they take care of?
Yeah, so performing rights organizations, they pay out your performance royalties. And so this is the other royalty that's owed to you for your music publishing. It's owed to you every single time your song is performed in public, whether that's you actually performing it yourself on a stage at a venue, if it's playing on a playlist or on the radio or anything like that. So how they work is they charge blanket fees to all of these places, restaurants, venues, et cetera. and then they do a really complicated formula, and that's how they pay you out. Another pro tip, though, for anybody listening, if you do perform a live show, especially now that that's kind of coming back, if you do perform a live show, you can register your set list with your PRO, and then you'll get paid for that public performance of your songs. So that's sort of the main function of the PRO. I will say another very important piece of information that you get when you sign up with a PRO is something called an IPI, which is the interested party information number. And this is something that uniquely identifies you as a songwriter all over the world. It is unique to you.
And like a fingerprint.
Like a fingerprint. And that's something that's really, really important to have in order to collect all of the royalties that are owed to you.
No, that was a good touch, because I was going to ask you about what an IPI is, because I think that's not a common term. You know, that's not something that's discussed when you're with your buddies and you're in the studio and you're making music. Nobody's discussing IPIs or ISRCs. So, you know, that is important. I guess since we're on that topic, you know, what is an ISRC code?
Yeah, so ISRC codes identify recordings. So you can have many ISRC codes for a single song, but only one song. And that is how you get paid your artist royalties. So like what we talked about before from your distributor, and neighboring rights royalties, which are both paid for sound recordings. So that's something that you usually get when you go to distribute your song from your distributor.
Okay. Solid. See, it's crazy learning about this stuff, because back like when I like first, when I first started this journey, not even just the educational part. Like I started off wanting to be, I had big dreams of being a rap artist. Like I used to be in my dorm room with like my remote in my hand, like performing my songs, like bouncing around in the room. And like, I was never thinking about any of this. And even as my knowledge began to progress, like in its earlier stages, this was still something, information that never came across my way. So this is very, very, very important for the people that are listening to this. But I, you know, like I want to keep rolling with the questions here.
So overwhelming when you go to sign up for the first time and they give you some Excel sheet and they're asking you for all of these data points. And it's like, how do I find my ISRC code? Where is my IPI number? All those kinds of things. Right. So, I totally get it.
There's just so much technical jargon thrown around that you're responsible for knowing. You can't sit and say, I didn't know any of this whenever the time comes. You know, you're responsible for knowing this information. And that's ultimately why we're here today, to explain this stuff to people and give them a better, a solid understanding about this. But just backtracking on what you said before about that grace period, I wanted to ask you, but I know you're on a roll, but once that grace period ends, this is a very shocking moment for a lot of people. Like every time I explain what we're about to talk about right now, they literally are like, are you serious? So after that grace period of the music not being registered, it's sitting there, it's being collected, but it's unclaimed because the PRO has no idea what to do with it. What happens to that money?
Just gets distributed to the members that they have. So this is something that's really important in mechanical royalties right now. There's been something you know, bouncing around the industry for a long time called black box royalties.
That's right, that's what it's called.
Which are mechanical royalties in particular that have been unpaid, and this is for much more than 3 years that they've just been sitting in a black box. And so in the US in particular, there's a new organization called the Mechanical Licensing Collective, the MLC, and they are responsible now for distributing that black box royalty due to some of the legal changes that happened in 2018. So they just in February, they received $424 million in unpaid mechanical royalties.
Unpaid, no owners.
No owners.
Well, there are owners, but they just didn't do what they were supposed to do.
Yeah, and so now they have, you know, they've said that they'll hang on to it until 2023. The 3-year grace period has begun. And at that point, they will distribute that $424 million to all of the artists that are our members. So when you sign up with The Noise, we do also send your information to the MLC to make sure that you're getting your unpaid mechanical royalties for the last however long. Hmm.
Beautiful. No, that's very generous. That's very generous. There's a lot of people that would appreciate that now that they're hearing how important this is. So if you're listening and you're, you know, you're not sure if you're completely registered the way that you're supposed to be, then, you know, this is your wake up call to go ahead and get that taken care of. Now, let's talk a little bit about Let's talk a little bit more about The Noise. How exactly does The Noise work? Like, if I go to your website and I sign up, what's next? What should I expect next?
Yeah, so if you go to our website and sign up, we charge a $20 sign up fee. This is just to cover like server costs for your information. Mm-hmm. You will most likely sign up as a songwriter. And then you can register your works. And so in order to register your works and to sign up with us, you do need your IPI number and you do need the ISRC codes and titles of the songs that you want to collect with. So once you sign up, you can register your catalog with us and then it gets ingested into our database. And then it goes out to all of our affiliates all around the world and we start collecting for you.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah.
And you already told them how much it costs. That's literally nothing. Like, it's a very, 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 very small investment for a very, very, very huge return. So my next question is, if someone already has a distributor, like, you know, someone uses DistroKid or something like that, can they still use The Noise?
Yeah. So we're not actually distributing your song, like your sound recordings or your songs. What we're doing is just collecting royalties for the composition. So if you're using a distributor, some of them do have options where you can opt in to collect YouTube money or to collect mechanicals. And so if you don't select those, then you can still use The Noise. Or even if you do for some songs, but there's other songs you want to try out with us that you don't select that on, then you can still use The Noise.
Okay. No, that's good to know. And then is there anything that The Noise does that someone's PRO wouldn't do? So like a BMI or ASCAP, what would that be, if at all?
Yeah. So again, I think I mentioned before, we do direct collections all around the world. So BMI and ASCAP have something called reciprocal agreements where they do get some money from other affiliates around the world, but we are collecting your publisher's shares of your performance royalties and making sure that your song is directly registered and directly collected from all of these territories. So you'll actually see that in your data. We have a pretty transparent platform where you can see like where the money is coming from, all of the micro pennies from all over the world.
How long does that take, the royalty collection take? Like, is it like as soon as I sign up and I can do the information that you need, am I rocking and rolling, or is there like some type of delay period? Like, what's the turnaround on that?
Yeah, so it depends on when you release your song. And again, around back collections, it can take somewhere between like 6 to 9 months to start seeing the bulk of your royalties coming in, but most of our users see at least something, and we pay out every quarter. So again, like if you sign up the day before the payout date, you probably aren't going to see anything right then, but for the next quarter you will.
Okay. And here's a question that is probably going to be complex for most, but we're going to try to do our best to break this part down.
Okay.
What's the difference between a writer's share and publisher's share?
Okay. So for the composition, it's usually split 50-50 into a songwriter share and a publisher share. And part of why this came about is because back in the day, publishers were really taking advantage of songwriters and musicians who really should be getting paid royalties, but
Right.
basically not paying them. So the songwriter share is sort of like a inalienable right that you earn. Even if you sold all of your publishing, you would still own your songwriter share. So when we're talking about the two different royalties, right? Performance royalties and mechanical royalties, I'm gonna add the layer. Mechanical royalties are paid 100% to the publisher. Performance royalties are paid 50% to the songwriter and 50% to the publisher. So even if you sign up with the noise, you should still register with a PRO. You have to do this to get an IPI, and you have to do this to collect your songwriter share. The noise is collecting, publishing, administrating the publisher's shares. So all of the mechanical royalties and the publisher share of the performance royalties.
Deep.
So that's the breakdown of that.
That is deep. It's crazy because like when I get to explaining this, I try not to get too far into it because I don't want to confuse people. Also because like I'm not the greatest at it too myself, which is why I have somebody like you on here right now to be able to explain this. But I always get into talking about, all right, so there's this tree, and at the top of the tree, this is your music, and then it gets split, and then it gets split again. And oh, by the way, some of that split, you need to be signed up with someone to get a portion who can handle that for you to get a portion of that split. You know, even though it's yours, you still need to be signed up. So it can get very complex. And I just thought it was funny that you started to use your hands to explain it because you literally have to. Like, if you don't have like something that you can write this stuff on and you just try to explain it, it's very, very, very easy to lose somebody on it. So I just thought that was pretty darn funny.
It's like you start with the base layer and then you just add just a little deeper, you know?
How long did it take you to learn all of this stuff? Like, did it just come
Man.
natural to you, or was it just like equally as confusing in the beginning?
Heck no. It did not come natural. If it comes naturally to you, God bless you. Honestly, there's a lot about the publishing industry that kind of just doesn't make sense, right? And so you sort of learn how it is, and that is how it is. You can even learn why it is how it is, and it kind of still doesn't really make logical sense. But here we are. We're here. So no, when I was in college back in the day, I read Donald Passman's book, Everything You Need to Know About the Music Industry, or the Music Business, I believe it's
Oh, I
called.
have that book.
Yes. And you definitely have to get the latest edition,
Yeah, because it
10,000%.
change things
Also,
change all the time.
because things change all the time. Also, he's a lawyer, so it's reads like a textbook. And that was maybe my first introduction into music publishing. And the first time, I think we had a teacher up there drawing circles on the whiteboard for like
See what
the
I'm saying?
composition,
You have
sound
to.
recording, and
You
like the
have to write it
splits
out.
and the whatever. And you know, it was like, I'm not gonna have to worry about this. I'm gonna do management. I'm gonna make my artist look and sound nice, and that's all I need to worry about. And it was like, oh
So would you say that like, and this is, it's crazy because I have to ask you these, like, I know that the answers to these questions are yes, but I have to ask them this way because it's going to help people understand why it's so important. So like, split sheets, are they
Yes.
necessary?
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Split sheets.
So,
Go ahead.
I want to jump in here and say I have a little piece about theory versus reality, right? It's really important to have split sheets, and it's really important to have them before the song comes out and
That was
before
gonna be my next
any
question
money
to
gets.
you. when should you, when is the right time to discuss that split sheet?
Because the second the song comes out, there are people there that now have more leverage than they did before it came out. Okay. Mm. So you have to get the split sheets and the agreements in place before the song comes out. So in theory, before you release a song, you have a producer agreement. I think most people work with producers.
Yeah.
You have a first use license from anybody who has written the song that's not you or the artist. Mm-hmm. And you have a split sheet. And so the split sheet explains what percentage of the composition everybody owns. And I highly recommend having one also for what percentage of the sound recording everybody owns, because that can be different. And most times it is different. Mm-hmm. So in theory, having those in place is super, super important. In practice, it is really hard. You know, you're in a session.
You just vibe.
You're vibing. Yeah. You're at the end of the session. People just want to hang, you know, maybe they're like smoking a blunt. Not really the time to present a piece of paper, a legally binding document for somebody to sign, right? Like, it's super square. It doesn't always work out that way. So at a minimum, try and get in a text message, an email, like just somewhere in writing what the splits are. Even if you like have a conversation with the person, then just text them afterwards and say like, hey, just sending you what we talked about, which was, you know, we're all splitting the song equally 50-50. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever it is, try and get it somewhere in writing. Because then it also makes it a lot easier to follow up afterwards with an email with an actual legally binding split sheet that people can sign.
Yeah. And like, I wonder, see, in my case, in a lot of my scenarios, like, because I do spend a lot of time in studios and I see what the process is like. And like, once the producer comes through, the beat maker rather comes through and, you know, they play that beat, it's gone from there. Like, no one's thinking about any type of contracts or anything like that. Like, as soon as people start mumbling those melodies, it's over, you know, at that point. So, and usually a lot of these people, they're friends too. And then some of them are complete strangers. But like, how do you have that conversation? Let's say like, even if it, let's say it's with friends, like how do you have that kind of conversation? Like with the split sheet, I know that can be a tough one to bring up, but like what's some tips on just introducing that?
There was something that somebody said actually in a Clubhouse chat that has stuck with me that was said recently, which was, do you want to be right or do you want to be loved? So when it comes to your friends, I would just have it be a casual conversation, right? Yeah. You can bring it up like, hey, we need to talk about this so that I can register everything for us. What do you feel comfortable with? You know, we don't have to get too crazy about like single percentage points for a trumpet line or an ad lib or something like that. But find something where everybody's happy with the outcome, whatever that is. So, you know, I will say in rap and hip hop, it tends to be the person who made the beat gets 50% and the lyricist gets 50%. Yeah. So, you know, if you have two rappers on the track and you guys are splitting it pretty evenly, maybe 25 for each of the rappers and 50 for the beat maker, whatever that is. Right. There's some different styles and like rules of thumbs for how people approach splits. Yeah. But I will just say, have the conversation, however uncomfortable it is, bring it up and just be like, hey guys, we have to talk about this. You know,
yeah.
I want to make sure we have this all sorted before it comes out, and make sure everybody's happy with whatever you decide.
Yeah, because once that, like, let's just hypothetically say that you put that song out, like you push it through DistroKid or TuneCore or CD Baby or whoever you decide to use. The song hits the market, and then boom, it lands. And this could very well be a real life scenario. It lands in the hands of or the ears of some like well-involved or engaged TikToker. And then the TikToker wants to go and make some challenge that goes viral to it. And now your song is viral and it's bringing in money. You know, what happens when there's no split sheet that's been signed? Let's talk about that process. Because that's, yeah. I think this is a real thing that could happen nowadays, honestly.
I think it's a real thing that does happen, honestly. Yeah. So whoever released it is responsible for making sure everybody's paid the money that they're owed.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of distributors now, like DistroKid, have options where you can automatically add people in based on their splits of their ownership of the master, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it a little bit easier. But whoever distributed is responsible for it. The problem here is that if you put out a song that and you're not the producer, they technically own the sound recording if you have no agreement in place. That gives them a lot more leverage over you because they can issue takedowns across all services and then you're going to be making $0 on that track. They also can ask for a lot more money or a lot more ownership than if you had just figured it out before it happened. Yeah. And so I say, like, with anything, band agreements, songwriting agreements, split sheets, like all this stuff, it is way easier and everybody tends to be a lot happier if you negotiate this stuff before there's any money.
Right.
Because the second there's money, it complicates things.
Yeah. Extremely complicates things because now people, especially if we're talking about something that's successful, like let's just say it ends up on Billboard Top 100, you know, it's accumulating a lot. At that point, it's accumulating a lot of money. And, you know, for that kind of money, that could be at stake. People's feelings get a little different, you know?
Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, maybe they were in the studio and they added one ad lib and they were like, I want a percent just for fun for this ad lib. And everybody's like, oh, okay, that's great. Well, when the money starts coming in and you make $1 million or something, that 1% is a lot of money.
It is.
For that ad lib, you know? And maybe if the song already came out and you saw the $1 million, you would be less inclined to give that person that 1%. And now they're unhappy, you're unhappy, the whole nine.
Yeah.
So
I think that's just bad for your brand too, because the last thing you want is somebody out there talking crazy, giving, I mean, some people will argue that all press is good press, but who wants to deal with negative press? Like, who wants to deal with someone speaking negatively about them in the media or something like that? You know, like, well, you could just prevent all of that stuff and you don't even have to go through that just by having that discussion in the beginning. So like, I know it's hard. I know it's also not a common thing to bring up a split sheet or something like that, like while you're in the studio or any type of binding agreement, but it's a, it's ultimately a conversation that you, it's an adult, it's an, one, it's an adult conversation and two, it's a business conversation. And I feel like if you try and introduce that to anybody and they get weird about it, that probably means you don't need to be doing business with that person in the first place because they don't really, they don't understand. And they don't understand, then why are we doing business together?
That is some really sound advice. I will say that I think the best scenarios are if you are working with a new producer in particular. It gets trickier with friends, but if you're working with a new producer, I think it's easier to, before you get in the studio at all, just ask them, like, hey, just so I know going in, what do you usually do for splits or what's your fee as a producer, to talk about it? Because then there's no surprises. Mm-hmm. And I also think it makes it easier and like a more comfortable creative space because you don't have to worry about that conversation. You've already had it.
Right, right. So like in the back of your mind, you're not thinking, when are we going to talk about splits? I hope it doesn't mess up the vibe. And then you don't want to be the one to mess up the vibe. So all that does is now that prolongs that conversation that should have taken place from the very beginning. And then when you try and bring it up after the fact, who knows where that discussion is going to go, you know? It's just, I don't know. I just know that I grew up a lot with like a lot of people not having these discussions. Like I witnessed a lot of great songs recorded in front of me. And I'm just, prior to knowing what I know now, it was like, I didn't think anything of it. But like now, like I'm thinking like, are those songs even worth pushing now? Because now there's no contractual agreement between any of the people that are putting it out. And where is that going to, where and what is that going to lead to? So It can get very, 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 very complicated if you don't take advantage of it early on. So, you know, like, what advice do you have to people just, I mean, for publishing? You know, it doesn't have to be about split sheets, but just publishing in general. You know, like, what could you tell a you before you knew about it?
Yeah, definitely. I would say, you know, that's a good question. There's a lot of things coming to mind.
I know. Sorry, I just dropped that on you. But like, because I know what, if I think about it myself, like there's a lot that I would tell artists to do. But
yeah, I would say sign up for a PRO and get your IPI.
Mm-hmm.
You really, most of them just work off of song title and artist name. So
yeah.
You don't even have to worry so much about the ISRC codes for that. Like, just get started at a minimum with that. And then I would say try your best to talk about splits or percentages or whatever else before you have writing sessions with people. And I think it's really hard when you're in the early stages of your career, because most of the time you're just in a room with your friends messing around.
You're not thinking of anything of it. You're not thinking that this song is about to go double, triple platinum, but that's where it happens.
It is.
That's where it happens.
Yep. So it's, try your best to talk about, like I said, even like a text message or an email, like something that's in writing. If like the idea of getting a contract is too daunting or intimidating, like at least something in writing that says how much everybody owns. And a pro tip for people who are maybe a little bit further in their careers, if you can work it so that people are getting a revenue share rather than ownership, that will make sync licenses a lot easier for you.
Because then, I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, because then you will have you will be in charge of your destiny. You can decide yourself without having to talk to anybody else if a song can be put in a movie or an ad or a Netflix show or whatever else. And that's important.
Yeah. No, that really is important. I think like sync licensing is one of the most slept on things, like streams of revenue when it comes to making music as an artist. I think people fail to realize that like your music can go further than just the radio and streaming platforms. And, you know, getting your song in a movie or in a TV show it might not be the most easiest thing to do, but when you really think about it, it's not the most complex thing to do. It's just knowing what to do. And one of the bigger things in that sphere is having the correct metadata associated with the record. So I know that you mentioned The Noise has a cataloging system. Does it catalog metadata?
Yes, it does. Yeah, we have a pretty cool database that helps. Like,
and what is metadata? Explain what metadata is for those who don't really know what it is.
So I'm actually not a super technical person when it comes to like software and data and that kind of stuff. Okay.
Break it down in the most simplest way that makes it easier for you to understand it, because 9 times out of 10, that's going to help other people. And if not, I'll back you up on it.
Yes. Okay. So in my mind, metadata is like a watermark on an image, right? It is just information that's embedded in the song file.
Yeah.
So it can include like the artist name, the title name, the ISRC code, your IPI numbers, all of the songwriters, the lyrics, contact information, BPM, genre, year it was released, all of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm.
You name it.
You name it.
It's in there. And the reason why, for people that are confused as to why one would need all that information, is because if you're looking for a sync placement, that music supervisor who is in charge of giving you that placement, they're going to want all that information so that they can pass it along to their superiors, for more than likely for legal purposes too, and for whatever use or intent that they may have for that particular project. And if you don't have all that information readily available for them to look at, they're not going to, unless there's some overwhelming reason why they need to contact you to continue working with you to use that song, they're not going to continue to work with you, because there's websites out there where you can literally pick from a litter. And if you probably won't even be allowed to be up on the site if you didn't have all that information. But let's assume that you don't. If you don't, you wouldn't even stand a chance against all those other songs that are up there. Because if there's one out there that gets the job done and it's got the correct metadata associated with it that that music supervisor can benefit from, then they're going to go with that song over yours, period. Mm-hmm. Because that clearly shows the music supervisor that this person has done their due diligence to make sure that this song is dressed up properly. Mm-hmm. And then once, you know, we're talking like big money at this point. So like, let's say it's for a movie or something like that. Like, we're talking big money at this point, and things have to be done the right way. And in order for mm-hmm. things to be done the right way, the proper information needs to be there so that everyone gets the credit. Cause one of the, piece of metadata are the songwriters too. Mm-hmm. Everyone's got to get their share. Everybody's got to get paid off of this. And it's risky for a music supervisor to want to take on your song to include it in their project if it doesn't include everything that you need, that they need in there. So metadata is extremely important. And I always tell people to try and include as much as you can, because you can do that straight through the DAW. You should be able to mm-hmm. put that information in Pro Tools or Logic or Reason or whatever you use to create the song. You should be able to put that information in. If not, I'm pretty sure... As a kid, it's crazy because growing up, I didn't know about metadata, but like I knew that if you right clicked on a song and they hit properties, there was always that tab, like the details tab, where you could see all this information in it. And like back when I would download stuff from LimeWire, I used to notice that like some of the songs would have all this information in there and then some wouldn't. And I always thought it was very intriguing how like some of the songs have that information in there. But it's all around dope. And it's also very, very important. And I feel like sync licensing is highly slept on, but it all starts with that correct metadata.
It's like, think about it. This music supervisor has an hour and a half worth of music to put into a movie. You want to make your job as easy as possible. They love two things, metadata that is correct and complete and accurate.
Yeah. Right.
And one stop, like one stop tracks is what they love. And this ties back into what I said, where like, if you own everything, the song outright, the master recording outright, and you either have permission from other owners to make decisions on everything, or they're just revenue sharing with mm-hmm. you rather than owning it, mm-hmm. then you alone can make the decision. So when they send you an opportunity, you can say yes or no, and they will know that they can get this turned around. And sync works super fast. Like if they have an opportunity come through a music supervisor, you might have like less than 24 hours to say yes or no or submit a song.
Seriously, because there's literally databases out there where they can, I forget some of the website names, but there's websites out there where music supervisors can go and they can literally pick up songs by mood. So it's mm-hmm. like, if they're looking for a particular mood for like a commercial or something like that, you know, they're filtering by that, and then they're churning and burning, you know, like, mm-hmm. is this right? And if it's not, they're already thinking in their head what resources they have available to see if they can make it right. You get what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Because it goes far beyond that original work that you created, because depending on what you negotiate, that music supervisor can then pass it on to their audio team. And then that audio team can go ahead and play around with the stems. If you are giving that to them, they can play around with the stems. They can make stuff louder. They can take stuff out if they need to fit with what it is that they're doing. So, mm-hmm. you know, these supervisors, they don't have that much time. They're not going to give you that much time because you're not the only one out there that's trying to get that placement. So
yeah.
You got to make sure you come correct the very first time around. And that's just mm-hmm. that, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, is there anything else that you want to add? You know, some last minute tips, some pro advice?
I just want to say, like, if this is the first time that you're learning about music publishing, like, just start. Even if you're unsure, just start. And I would say, like, step number one would be signing up with a PRO, a performance mm-hmm. rights organization. whatever country you are in, every single one has one that collects royalties. So just start there, sign up for the PRO. From there, you can sign up with the noise and we can kind of handle the rest. I think that there's part of what we wanted to do as an organization was make this easy for songwriters to just come and register one place and know that their money is being collected all around the world. So, you know, we do our best to break it down. Don't be afraid of Googling stuff. It takes a minute. It takes some repetition. You can start at Music Pub 101 again, listen through things again, but I promise you will get it. So, yeah, just start, I think.
That's really the magic right there. Just start, just do it. And, you know, you don't want to not do it because it's going to come back later on. Or when you do wake up and you realize that this is something that you should have been doing, now you got to put in a little bit more work, or you got to wait a little bit longer to reap the benefits of the work that you put in. So I'm really thankful for you. I'm really glad that you came up here and decided to give this information, because I'm telling you, the applications that I've had from my program, when it comes to, you know, what PRO are you affiliated with? You know, some people even said, I don't even know what that is. And in my mind, I'm like, what? But then I have to put myself in their shoes and think like, well, how would you know if nobody even told you? Like, your favorite artist isn't getting on these interviews on YouTube or on TV and talking about what PROs or what publishing admins they work with. Like, nobody talks about that. Because I can kind of understand it, because like, once it's set up and it's working for you, especially if it's not self-managed and someone's doing it for you, then there's no need to talk about it because it's happening. You know what I mean? You're reaping the benefits from it and it's happening. So I can understand when I put myself in their shoes, but I'm still like, oh my gosh, because I go and I look and I see that this person might have an entire catalog. You know, they might be building like a solid catalog on, you know, these DSPs, but all the while they're not affiliated with anybody. They have no publishing administrator that they work with. And they're kind of just putting out music and promoting it to the best of their abilities. And I'm just like, wow, you know, you're missing out on a lot. So
I will say it's a lot easier to start this process with like 5 or 10 songs than it is with 200 songs. So
for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Because who wants to sit and register like 200 songs, you know? That's something that you have to do. Yeah, you have to do on your own. And it is very, very time consuming. And it is very, very daunting of a process to go through. So I hope we didn't confuse people too much, you know, with a lot of the terminology being tossed around. I say, for those who don't understand the terminology, just Google the words. Like, I'm pretty sure there's like some publishing dictionary out there where things get easily broken down so you understand what's what. I also say, try your best to follow along with this recording, because things do get smoother. But in the beginning, you know, we do have to talk about those things. And if an artist is sitting, if your goal is to get signed and you're sitting with a record label, you know, this type of stuff is going to be in your contract. And you want to make sure that you understand, like, you don't want to just go into a negotiation and just be blind with the terminology and what's going on. So it pays to listen to interviews like this. It pays to do the research. It pays. No, like, no pun intended, but like, it literally pays.
Literally pays, yes.
To know this kind of stuff.
I mean, something interesting around contracts is sort of what happened with Taylor Swift and Scooter Braun.
Yeah.
So if you don't know, definitely Google this. There's a lot out there about it. But Scooter Braun, which is Taylor Swift's former manager, bought her record, the record label that she started on, which means that he became the owner of the master recordings for some of her first albums. And she was really disappointed that she didn't have the opportunity to buy those herself. And he sold them to another holding company and she still doesn't own them. And so in her contract, it was good timing because it came to a close in one of the clauses where she can, since she owns the song, she owns the composition, she could make new master recordings and put them out there for people to listen to, where she will earn on both the recording and the composition, and not just the composition. So that's something that is an interesting point on publishing and clauses and recording contracts. If you're interested, definitely look up that story. Is a really good like real life case study.
Yeah, and I mean, Taylor Swift is a very big artist. Like Taylor Swift is practically a household name. And you see, it doesn't matter how far along you are in your journey in the music business, you're still susceptible to these types of things happening to you if, you know, you don't do your due diligence. Or, I mean, that might not have been a due diligence thing to her. Like, she probably just didn't know what was going on. You know what I'm saying? So it's just important to be aware of where you're at as far as publishing goes. The sooner the better. The more that you are familiar with this process, it will not matter once, you know, you progress as an artist, because not only are you already involved in it, but as time goes on, you're going to be accumulating more knowledge as time goes by, as long as you keep, you know, investing in knowledge. But, you know, as time goes by, this is going to be something that's familiar to you. So when, but also if you have any desire to sign some type of deal or put yourself in any type of contractual binding with some other entity or person or individual or whatever the case may be, you'll be able to look at it and, you know, you'll know right then and there, all right, is this good? Or is this something that we need to discuss? Or are you going to be able to push that contract back on the other side of the table and say, hey, I think you need to look at X, Y, and Z. But you won't know that if you're not investing in, you know, this space. So with that, we're out of here. Lauren, go ahead, tell them where they can find you at, where they can find the noise. Give them that last minute social scream.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so you can find me on Instagram and TikTok at Low End Lolo. And that's like my base moniker. That's going to be most of the content that you'll get there. And then you can find the noise at thenois.org. That's our website. And then all of our socials are thenois.org. We're on Clubhouse, Instagram, Twitter, the whole nine.
Very nice. Very nice. Very nice. Well, Lauren, thank you so much. I really appreciate you. I don't want to take up any more of your precious time that you just gave, because you just dropped so many gems. I could probably get a Rolex and put stones all in my Rolex like these rappers do nowadays with all the gems you just dropped. So thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. I appreciate you. And I'm excited for the noise, to see the growth of the noise. And yeah, that's all I've got.
Thank you so much for having me. I love nerding out about music publishing and knowledge. So thank you so much.
That's so good.